Good morning and welcome to our STS-135 post-landing news conference. We're pleased today to be joined by NASA Associate Administrator for Space Operations, Mr. Bill Gerstenmaier.
Good morning.
Kennedy Space Center Director, Bob Cabana.
Hi.
Space Shuttle Program Launch Integration Manager, Mike Moses.
Good morning.
And Shuttle Launch Director, Mike Leinbach.
Good morning, everybody.
We'll open up with some comments from the panel, and then we'll be happy to take your questions. Mr. Gerstenmaier?
Thanks, Mike. First of all, I really want to thank the Space Shuttle team and the Space Shuttle program for just a tremendous effort today and throughout the entire history of the program. I can't say enough about the team and how great a job they've done. We gave them a tremendous challenge to fly and execute these missions and to finish strong, and I can tell you today the team accomplished every one of those objectives, and they just did a tremendous job. When we walked out on the runway and we looked underneath the vehicle, it was one of the cleaner vehicles I've seen. The bottom of the vehicle looked excellent. The entire mission was very smooth. A tremendous amount of cargo was transferred back and forth between the station and the shuttle. All that went tremendously smoothly. Everything worked just flawlessly, just like it should on every mission. So with all the distractions and the problems of uncertainty of where the future was going and things, the team stayed focused. They did exactly what they needed to go do, and they really delivered a quality end to the program. So I want to, again, thank the team for that. I'd also like to thank the nation for allowing us to have these 30 years to go use the shuttle system. This is a tremendous vehicle. As I stood out on the runway and stared at it, I looked at this winged vehicle and I thought about all the systems and when they were designed back in the 70s. And it was a true marvel looking at that machine sitting on the runway. It really allowed us to do amazing things, and it's going to continue to allow us to do amazing things in the future. And that's the next steps. The next steps are the space station. We're going to continue to use the space station. We've put it in as best a posture as we can for this next period of time. We'll see the new commercial cargo providers come online late this year and the beginning of next year. We get a chance to see if space can really be that research facility that we need. We can learn new things from space that are really unique and help us here. So we'll continue on with that and the commercial activities. And then we need to get on with our exploration plans. I think we need to really get some good ideas to go forward beyond low Earth orbit to keep moving forward. So again, I can't thank the shuttle team enough for what they've done. I recognize that the change is very hard, but huge growth or huge improvement really comes from change. And so this team that can accomplish almost anything that they're asked to go do, I know that they can accomplish great things in the future, both individually and as a team. I wish them the best as they go forward. They should be very proud of what they have done. They have accomplished everything we wanted them to go do. They will be successful in the future, and they will do great things. Thank you, Space Shuttle team. Bob?
Thanks, Bill. Bill pretty much captured it. First off, it is great to have Atlantis safely home after a tremendously successful mission, home to stay, and that's really important too. I just can't say enough good things about the processing team here at KSC and how they've performed these last few flights. When you consider, it's been our number one goal the last couple of years to safely fly out the shuttle program, and we've accomplished that. And when you consider the folks that know they're going to be out of work here in tomorrow is their last day, and they've performed flawlessly right up to the very end with high morale and dedicated to what they're doing. And that's the kind of workers we've got here at KSC. And it just, I have extreme pride in each and every one of them, and I'm just really pleased. I'm proud to be part of the program at this point in history. As Bill said, we've achieved that goal now. We have safely flown out the shuttle, and we're gonna take pride in that today. We're gonna celebrate. We've got a team event going on outside the OPF as we tow Atlantis back. We're gonna pause for a little bit, allow folks to get pictures with the vehicle in the background, and celebrate what we have accomplished these past 30 years with the space shuttle program, and specifically with this last mission. But When that's complete, then it's time to move on and focus to the future. And as Bill said, you know, you can't continue to do the same things and expect to do something else that's better. You have to have change. And in the austere budget times that we have, we cannot afford to continue to fly the space shuttle and still work on those future programs. So now we're going to take this extremely talented and dedicated team that we have across the agency that has been focused on the space shuttle program, and we're going to focus a lot of energy on enabling that future for KSC, for NASA, and our nation. And we will enable commercial space to get our crews to and from the space station. And we're going to work on that that heavy lift vehicle that's going to allow us to explore beyond our home planet. And as you all know, the multipurpose crew vehicle was named Orion. The first hardware for the test vehicle arrives here at the Cape later this year to be processed over in the ONC High Bay. So we're going to focus on what we need to do to prepare the launch site, the facilities here, to make it a multi-user spaceport, to enable commercial space, and to get us that big rocket that allows us to go exploring as we move beyond our home planet. So I think today's a great day to celebrate. There's a lot of emotions, highs and lows, as we give hugs and say goodbyes, but also take pride in what we've accomplished. And it's pretty amazing when you look back on it. Thanks.
Thanks, Bob. Let's see. Boy, it's been a heck of a day. And a heck of a program. I personally, same kind of sentiments. Unbelievably proud to be here representing the space shuttle program and the thousands of people across the country that do the work. The Kennedy teams do an amazing job. You saw this vehicle performed almost flawlessly. Hardly any issues to talk about at all. Really let us focus on the mission of stocking up the station for the future. The teams back at Johnson Space Center in Houston, the mission control team, is world-class. There is none better for executing a mission and flying the plan. The lead flight directors and the asset entry flight directors really lead an amazing team of folks back there. In addition to all the station support controllers and the rest of the engineering staff at Johnson Space Center. And then our friends up in Marshall Space Flight Center put together a truly awesome set of propulsion hardware to get us into orbit every time that's worked flawlessly. And has been doing just fantastic here in the home stretch, allowing us to really do exactly what we've all been talking about, which is finishing strong and keeping on the target. When you look back, the shuttle program's racked up quite a history. I was just doing a little quick math. We did 1,300 days in orbit. If you think about that for all the vehicles in the fleet, that's about 43 months of time up in space. It's nothing compared to the time that the space station's clocking up, but for a vehicle built 30 years ago, whose purpose was to build the space station, it's quite a feat. And that station itself is impressive. You guys saw the station, hopefully you got to see the station fly by about 10 minutes before landing. I don't know how much we owe the station program for doing that, but man, it was picture perfect. I couldn't have thought of anything better to do than to have that go by just before we had touchdown. You know, hearing the sonic booms as Atlantis came home for the last time really made it drive home to me that this has been a heck of a program. And again, I can't even begin to put into words my feelings. You know, they all kind of culminated there. Right now, I don't feel too much other than just a little bit hungry, a little bit tired. But it's been a nice ride. And I don't think I can say anything else without blabbering on. So I'm just going to pass it on to Mike.
Okay, thanks, Mike. I have two statements I'd like to make. One is to thank the workforce here at the Kennedy Space Center. I've worked here all my career, 27 years, and you get to know the folks here and you get to love them all. And those folks out on the runway today were doing the job today just like they've done every other landing, and it was just a marvel to see. I know I'm sounding like a broken record here, but these feelings from myself and from the other guys up here are true feelings that the workers out here and across the country in the space shuttle program have dedicated their lives, their hearts, and their souls to this program. And I couldn't be more proud of them and to call them my friends and to wish them well. Second, I'd like to thank you all, members of the press, for the years of service. You've become family members as well. Some of you have gone way back, Jay in particular. And so you all have been good friends of the space program too, so I'd like to thank you all. It's a good day. Program's over, mission complete. Everybody feels good that we got the crew home safely. And we're looking forward to our next challenges. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take questions here. Please wait for the microphone, state your name and affiliation, and to whom you're addressing your question, and we'll start off with Marcia Dunn.
Marcia Dunn, Associated Press, for Mike Leinbach. When was the most emotional point for you this morning, seeing the shuttle, walking up to it, hearing the booms? Could you just sort of share your sentiments?
Well, there were several, Marcia. Deorbit burn, the gopher, the burn, knowing that that this mission was coming to an end. Out on the runway, I found myself, as I did with Discovery and Endeavor, just taking in the beauty of the vehicle, standing back and taking pictures taking pictures of the workers them asking for a picture with me, it was a family event out there today. Hard to describe the emotions. They were good emotions that we brought the crew home safely and the mission's complete. Certainly sadness that it's over and people will be moving on and hate to see them leave, but that's a reality. I saw grown men and grown women crying today. Tears of joy, to be sure. And that was just human emotions came out on the runway today, and you couldn't suppress them.
Jay?
Jay Barbary with NBC. Bill, the question today really is, we're celebrating, but when will astronauts lift off again from Cape Canaveral? We've had 166 flights with this one, and I know that SpaceX is asking to deliver cargo before the year's end with their Dragon spacecraft. They haven't yet got approval from NASA. Maybe you can tell us where that is. And if you really think that they have a shot, or Boeing has a shot with their CST-100 to put astronauts in space from here by 2014 or 2015, what's your thinking on that? And also for Mr. Cabana, my friend, I want to say that we old guys took a vote among ourselves here today, and we decided that these two mics sitting up there are the best that you can find. And if you mess with them, we're going to have to come talk to you. Okay?
I'll owe you $20.
All right, $25.
Well, I agree.
Okay, Bob.
I guess, first of all, in terms of the combination of the C2, which is the demonstration flight where we're just going to go close to the space station with the Dragon capsule, and then we were going to do C3, which was actually go up and stop and then be picked up by the arm and then berth the station. We technically have agreed with SpaceX that we want to combine those flights, but we haven't given them formal approval yet. We still want to go through some more analysis to go take a look and define exactly what criteria makes up that combined mission, what objectives are there, what the go-no-go criteria is. And there's also some details of the flight design we would like to get through. And then there's also some analysis we'd like to work with SpaceX in terms of their software systems, do some Monte Carlo runs to go look at the robustness. Because overall, what we want to do is we want to get to cargo delivery as fast as we can. And if the systems are mature enough and the design is mature enough, combining those two flights is that best way to get cargo to ISS in the fastest manner possible. If there's still a little bit of work to do, and there's a lot of work to do, you may gain something by splitting them back into two missions, where you do one, you do a little bit less demanding, but then that gives you a lot of knowledge. It then helps you apply that knowledge to that next mission that follows. So we're trying to decide what the right exact step is, but we are doing all the planning to go ahead and those missions combined. The capsule's being designed that way. The software's being built that way. And we're just kind of waiting for the right formal time that we collectively agree that this is the right thing to go forward. So we're very aggressively working that with the SpaceX Corporation through a series of reviews and also some internal reviews within NASA to get that activity done. And there may not be a crisp day. We kind of talked about deciding that in July. It may be in August, September. We'll find the right time when we get enough runs and data behind us so we can formally say we're heading that way, but we are technically definitely looking at those missions being combined. The next question is a little bit about commercial crew. Again, I think there's a lot of work to be done there. There was some meeting held yesterday where we're starting to talk to all the commercial providers or all the folks that could be interested in doing commercial crew activities. We are in the middle of commercial crew development two, which is a series of tests, and you know the contractors that are involved, that the four that we've got, and then we'll go ahead and continue to work through that. We'll potentially look at some contracts to or contracts or SpaceX to go ahead and continue that activity. We think that culminates sometime around in a flight in maybe 2015, 2016 timeframe. It's a lot of work to really get ready to go carry crew, and we'll let the technical work kind of drive us and see where we are. But I think from a planning standpoint, we'll look to that kind of time frame. So say mid-2015, 2016, we could potentially see Americans again launching here from the Kennedy Space Center. But the first things immediately are to see how well cargo works, to see what we can do from a cargo standpoint. That's absolutely critical to station, and we'll get those first easier steps first, and then step up to the more demanding task of flying crew.
Heavy lift announcement.
Again, we've worked kind of a technical recommendation we have. We're still working through the budgeting estimates associated with that. We've got to show folks that we have a very viable, credible plan to go do that. So we're spending a lot of time in Washington explaining to folks what the plan is, what our technical recommendation is. Plan's probably too strong a term. But it's our recommendation of the way we would like to proceed. So as soon as we can get them to understand the way we've put together our budget assumptions, there's an independent cost assessment that's going on by a corporation. It'll take a look at what we've done. They'll also go look at the way we've put together the pieces to see if that's the right way to move forward. And maybe in the August timeframe, that activity is complete, and then we're ready to go talk about more formally what's going to be there for heavy lift. But we've got a pretty strong technical recommendation. We know what we want to go do. We think we've got features in there that are really beneficial to us overall to keep us moving forward, but we want others to review that to make sure that it is right before we officially announce it.
August?
I don't know.
Okay. Clara.
Hi, Clara Moskowitz with space.com, and it's a question for anybody who'd like to answer. I know that up until wheels stop, you've all been primarily focused on completing the mission and completing the program. And I wonder just how much have you had to push aside some of the emotions, and how much have they maybe come to hit you now that that work is done?
Well, for me, it was kind of like that after launch. A big wave of emotion went past, and then it was in little places it would bubble up during the mission. You know, Fergie did a fantastic job of recognizing verbally all the folks around the country that have contributed. And every once in a while, you'd catch one of his speeches on the TV, or I'd read an article that one of you had written that particularly pulled at a string. And it just kind of occasionally happened. Almost every day, there was an instance where something happened. Yesterday we got the word that the Empire State Building was going to light up in red, white, and blue overnight for us. And that kind of just, you sat there and you went, wow. So it's kind of just been going on constantly. And today, having the mission focus part of today pushed it back down again. I suspect by the time I get back home, it'll probably come back up again. But for now, it's still that mission focus, getting the crew home today. And that went really well. Looking forward to being able to go out to the OPF and hang out with all my friends down here that I've made at the Kennedy Space Center, and just kind of wish them well. You know, they're a big number of them are heading out the door tomorrow. And so, it's just going to, I think it's going to keep going for a while, the motions.
Well, one more question on this side of the room, and then we'll come over here, and then we'll catch the next row here. Did anyone else want to respond to that? Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Francisco Villalobos from Noticieros Televisa Mexico, and the question is for Mr. Cavan. It's a two-part question, but first of all, thank you for your hospitality on behalf of all the Spanish-speaking Hispanic reporters that we were here. Your staff and your crew and everybody here in the center has treated us tremendously, and we appreciate for your hospitality, sir. Mexico and a lot of countries in Latin America are starting to have space agencies of their own. Mexico in the Yucatan Peninsula has a very privileged spot, similar to Cape Canaveral, where perhaps NASA could exploit a possible launching site. And as the future changes, as NASA is entering this new era of more international cooperation, perhaps commercial launching, I was wondering if Mexico was one of your perhaps target areas, and when perhaps, if it's so, when would you see launching site that you guys may use in the future. That's one part. And the second part of the question is that there's a gap that obviously is between launch vehicles, space vehicles, I'm sorry, that we have that we didn't have when the Apollo ended in 72 and at the same time the shuttle was approved. And do you believe or do you think, sir, that NASA could have been a little bit more assertive perhaps with Congress when it comes to negotiating the budget or a little bit more assertive or aggressive with them to show the importance of funding the world's most important space agency, sir?
Well, let's see. First off, the Kennedy Space Center doesn't make international agreements, and any work that would be done with other partner nations or international operations comes out of headquarters. So I wouldn't be involved. From a point of view of, you know, gaps, if you look back, you know, yes, we had that we were going to build shuttle. Originally, we flew the we ended up flying in 1981. We were scheduled to fly in 78. There was a three-year slip there. We flew the last Apollo-Soyuz test flight in 75. So, you know, there was a six-year gap between when we last flew and we flew on the shuttle. When you say we don't have a vehicle to go fly on, I know of four vehicles that are competing right now trying to be designed to fly Americans in space. And some are further along than others, getting to critical design reviews. So I believe we do have a plan to get folks to low Earth orbit. We just got to make sure that we enable it and make it happen. From a heavy lift point of view, we've defined the Orion spacecraft as our multi-purpose crew vehicle, and we are building that, and it's very far along in its testing. So I think we have the vehicles more or less defined. What we now have to do is follow through on our plan and make it work to get them flying.
Here in the front row.
Hi, Eben Brown, Fox News Radio, for anyone who would like to take it. If someone came to you in April of 81 and said, you're going to fly these things for 30 years, and in the process you were going to go hang out at the Mir space station, you were going to launch an amazing space telescope, and then you were going to build this behemoth of a space station, would you tell them that they were crazy? Or did you think that, oh, yeah, no, that's what we're going to do?
Well, I'll answer that partway. I think back then that folks had great visions for the space shuttle. And I think a space station was part of those visions. That was the main reason for having a space shuttle, was to go to a space station. It just took us a while. I mean, if you look back on, you know, Space Station Freedom, where we were, I mean, they were looking at a space station in 1984. It just took us a while to get the final design and get where we needed to go. The Russian cooperation part, that might have been a little bit different in 1981. But again, it shows how things change and how valuable the space shuttle is. I mean, when you consider, look at the American United States Astronaut Corps pre-shuttle and look at it post-shuttle. Look at the diversity that we have. The shuttle did that. The international partners that we've flown, that happened because of the shuttle. So, you know, it's pretty amazing. So I think folks had great vision for the shuttle. It's what it was designed to do, and I think it performed its mission extremely well when you look at that International Space Station on orbit.
And Evan, Bob said it exactly right, but there were those moments. Those are some of my most cherished ones back in mission control, where you'd sit there and you'd be handed a mission and a bunch of payloads, and you'd look at it and you'd go, we're going to do what? And you know, we're going to put this 100-foot boom over the side of the orbiter with a radar antenna on the end of it, and then we have to do RCS burns in the middle of it, and it's going to wing around like a fishing rod. But just like a fishing rod, we'll time it just right so that we don't snap it in half. And you say, we're going to do what? And it went perfect, and we got one of the highest resolution radar maps of the Earth on that space radar mapping mission. But, you know, that was the challenges, and that was the fun and excitement of this program, is around the corner there was always something new and different and new challenge, and you'd incorporate some new activity, some new payload. The station, when we first started, it was going to be not as big or as intense. It was going to be a lot of self-assembly with robotics. We realized we weren't quite ready to do that. We threw the EVA team into the mix. You know, just everything we've learned every day that this program has been in existence has been amazing. I think the vision was there at the beginning, but I think those folks would look at what we did now and be really proud of just how mature that vision became.
And a lot of it, real quick. You know, it's not the hardware, and a lot of times things don't get used for what they were designed to do, but it's the ingenuity of the people and the team that are able to take you know, something and make it happen maybe different from what was intended. Or when we ran into problems, look at all the problems we ran into with the space shuttle and how we solved them, you know, on orbit, rescuing satellites and so on. And it's a team. As great as the hardware is, it's the team that makes it what it is. And that's why I'm so confident about our future, because, you know, we still got this outstanding, amazing team that's going to make it happen.
And I would say the same kind of thing is, as we reflect today, right, we kind of want to have a perfect plan for the future, right? We're going to go do X, Y, Z and all these things. That's not so important in my mind, because you're not necessarily going to achieve all those things in precisely the order or the precise the timing. But if you take that step and you go with the right bigger vision and the right agility, and you challenge this team to go do things, you can accomplish amazing things that actually exceed what you've really intended to begin with. You know, in the research field, the big breakthroughs don't come from incremental steps. They come from somebody observing something that they didn't really intend to see, and then that human is smart enough to pull off of that data, and then that really advances the next steps. And so as you look back on the shuttle, did it achieve exactly what we planned? No, but look at all the other things that it's enabled. Now the next program, don't worry so much being precise of what it's got to go do and try to justify every penny that goes into it. Get that ingenuity out there to challenge the workforce, to challenge human ingenuity, to really push, and you don't know where this country and this people pulling together can actually accomplish and what they can go do.
Craig.
Thanks. It's Craig Cavalt with Aerospace America for Bill. Bill, on your comment there about technical recommendations for the heavy lift, can you characterize where LOX RP-1 engine development falls in the overall picture, possibly as a follow-on to an SSME power plant for the heavy lift?
Yeah, again, it's, you know, until the plan is really approved, it's probably premature for me to talk about the specifics and details. But we've got an approach that tries to leverage off of what we've got today, but then it also allows for new technology to get entered in at the right time and move forward. So we're not ruling out LOX RP for some aspect of this thing. We think there's some potential there. We think solids also can have a potential. But the idea is then how do you let competition or let ingenuity drive some of those pieces? So we've kind of laid out a framework to go do that from a decision process. I can't say too much more until it gets a little bit more approval, but that's the basic kind of concept that we've laid out to try to not totally discount what we've got in the past, but to use it where it makes sense, but then also give us a growth path to interject some new technology if it's really there and it's really mature and ready to go forward.
Robert.
Hi, Robert Perlman with CollectSpace.com with, I guess, a question for anyone who wants to take it. I realize the shuttle program, or at least the shuttle flights, are only hours over, but trying to put the program into a perspective of the human spaceflight legacy, I wonder if you feel that the shuttle will be appreciated for what it has done, what it did do, or whether, like Gemini has in between Mercury and Apollo, it'll become the unsung workhorse of getting us to that next step. Which in now is exploration beyond low Earth orbit.
I'll go first. I don't see how the shuttle cannot help but be recognized for the outstanding vehicle that it is. It allowed us to learn how to actually live and work in space. Look at the EVAs that we did out of the shuttle. I mean, we've done so many things with the shuttle that just could not have been done otherwise. I think it's what has enabled us to say, all right, you know, we got to focus on going beyond Earth now. We've learned how to work in low Earth orbit. We've got a lot more to learn about deep space and about long duration space flight. We got a space station there as a result of the shuttle. I think that's got to be one of the shuttle's crowning achievements. That world class laboratory that we have up there. Now we got to utilize it, and I think the space shuttle will be recognized for that.
You know, And Robert, I've addressed this a little bit in the past too. I was asked once, was the shuttle worth the cost? And my response was, it was absolutely worth the cost, but not from a monetary perspective, but from an evolutionary perspective of the space program and what I believe we need to do as humans is go colonize elsewhere, eventually. And so, as Bob said, we've learned to work and live in low Earth orbit. It was a natural step in that process, and the shuttle was the right vehicle for that, and it performed extremely well. And so it's an evolutionary step. We're about to take the next steps. But I believe we need to have a vision as a being that eventually we need to go colonize elsewhere. And that ought to be our vision. And enable that somehow over the next many, many decades, obviously, centuries. But the shuttle will always be looked back upon as the next logical step after Apollo, and then we need to go to the next step after shuttle.
Mark Ratterman with Talking Space. A question for Mike Leinbach. We've been talking about change, and I've got kind of a look forward question. What advice 20 years ago would have been nice to have to help you prepare for the changes of today?
Change, as managers, we've all been through a lot of management courses. And one thing that comes across is the process of change. And there are four phases of change, right? And it doesn't matter what the change is. Any major change in one's life, you go through these four changes, these four stages, and it's denial, anger, exploration, and acceptance. And so we've all been through that now in the shuttle program, and we've accepted the fact that it's over. I think if we look back, a number of years, maybe 4 or 5 years, we knew the end was coming. I believe the workforce has handled that change well, because we were given that time to accept that change. The finality of it is, there's no doubt, it's over now, and that affects a lot of people. But given the fact that we had 3 or 4 years to prepare for this really very, very focused way, I think helped the people deal with that. And I heard nothing but pride out on the runway today. When I talked to the people in between the hugs and the pats on the back, the pride that they have of having been part of this amazing program, this amazing bit of history. No one can ever take that away from us. And so I think over the last 3 or 4 years, we've been concentrating on completing the job that we were given to do. We've done that now successfully. We have a lot of pride in that, and no one can take that away from us.
James?
James Dean with Florida Today. Mike Leinbach, you kind of just touched on this, but I was going to ask one of Fergie's comments during an interview with respect to the sort of despondent mood among the worst workforce was that we needed to go through kind of a moment like being at a wake to get through that grief and get through the acceptance and all that. I wondered if you felt like that might be what's going on today as we're seeing the tow back and the celebration that'll happen if that'll, you have more of a sense after today of being able to move on.
Certainly. There's that, again, those processes, those phases of change are coming into play today. But this is a machine that we have to retire. It's a program that's over. It's not as traumatic as people think it is. I've been through a lot more traumatic things in my life, and these guys have been through a lot more traumatic things in their lives, and you have too. This is the end of the program. People will move on and do well. It's the loss of something that means important, that is important to us, but it's certainly nothing like the loss of a family member. It's important, but it's not the end of the world. The sun will rise again tomorrow.
Back over here.
Donna Leinwand from USA Today. This is for anyone who wants to answer it. Looking at a non-shuttle program right now, what that's going on in NASA makes you excited? What do you think that the general public should be interested in when they look at NASA programs until you start going
I'll
to
jump
Mars?
In real quick, and somebody else can add more. And we got 3 awesome science missions coming up here, Juno, August 5th, Grail to the Moon. And I was over in the PHSF yesterday looking at the Mars Science Lab. the rover going through its final testing before it all gets packed up to send something the size of a car to the surface of Mars to explore for at least 2 years. That's exciting, having a rover that big with the capability that it has, not to mention the unique way that it's getting delivered to Mars. I mean, this is great stuff. People ought to be excited about it. It's neat. It's a precursor to sending humans there, having these robots go explore and learn to prepare us for the future.
And, you know, I would just say we got to see it today. 9 minutes before landing, this little white dot went over the horizon. And it was that's a 900,000-pound research facility in space with six people, international folks, living every day in space doing research. Now, that's not easy because that little white dot, it's hard to see the solar rays. It's hard to see. It's as big as a football field. It's hard to understand the research. And so we're going to have to collectively all figure out a way we talk about it differently. You know, it's easy to come and see a launch. You can feel the launch. You can see the launch. You can internalize it yourself. But that research activity of what we're doing, those are really the first steps we are getting to go beyond beyond low Earth orbit, or to actually go colonize beyond the Earth, as Mike described. So that is the next phase. So how do we as a people talk about that in a way that relates to everyday folks, that they can understand what the potential is of that research facility? And that's our collective challenge, is how we make that connection. How do you make that little white dot real that's as exciting as a launch that you see, or as a landing that you saw 9 minutes later?
Jay.
Jay Barbary with NBC. Bill, if I wrote tonight that your heavy lift coming up, now I realize you cannot answer this, and I respect that, but if I wrote tonight that your heavy lift coming up would use the current shuttle boosters, current tank, SSME engines, and the J-2 to go into space, and it would be built in a fashion that could be updated throughout the coming years with better propulsion systems or new or more better technology rather than fixed into that position. Would you have much argument with that?
Why is this the answer is yes, because it's got pieces of those, but it doesn't have it the way you described it. So we got to be careful, right? So let us get through the process. Let us have some folks review it and see where they are. But that's a little too clean, a little too crisp, and it's a little more complex than what you described. So the simple answer is no.
Okay, well, I got a lot more than I had.
All right.
Okay, and the green shirt back here.
Hi, Curtis Krueger with St. Petersburg Times. You all mentioned a lot of pride and national pride in the workforce, from the workforce in this space shuttle that's got the American flag and the NASA meatball on it. How will your view change, and how should the nation make of it when the next astronauts who fly are on commercial space vehicles here at Kennedy?
Well, I'm assuming those commercial vehicles are built here in the United States. They're still going to have an American flag, and they'll be supporting NASA missions. I think they ought to take great pride that we're expanding the envelope and trying to open up space to everyone. It's going to take a lot of work, and it's not going to happen overnight, but they're American rockets and American spacecraft taking American crews to space, so they ought to have a lot of pride in that.
We'll wrap it up with a question from Robert Perlman.
Hi, Robert Perlman with CollectSpace.com with a question for Mike Leinbach. I asked some of the other shuttle team members this question back in Houston. There is one more shuttle still flying, albeit it's quite small, the shuttle model that was left on the International Space Station that you and others signed. Can you share what it means, what the crew called a monument means to you, and your role of having the signature on it?
Well, see, I was completely honored to be asked to sign that, and I remember when I signed it, I told John Shannon, I'm signing on behalf of the launch team and the processing teams here at the Kennedy Space Center. So a little bit of everyone is on that signature up there, and that means a lot. You know, it's a tangible thing that we can go retrieve one day and look back on the shuttle program. There's a little bit of everybody on the space station right now. Feels good.
All right, well, we are going to close things. Atlantis is being towed back to the orbiter processing facility as we speak, and in about an hour there will be an employee appreciation event, the beginning of which you'll get to watch live on NASA television with Mr. Cabana and NASA Administrator Charles Bolden. That'll be the next Kennedy activity on NASA television. So once again, thank you very much for coming, and have a great day.